This week on Vaticano, join us in commemorating the Feast of St. Joseph and exploring Christian fatherhood. Journey to Fossa Nova to celebrate the 750th anniversary of St. Thomas Aquinas' passing and embark on the Vatican Museum's Lenten tour. For this and more, Vaticano starts now. In a recent interview, Pope Francis said that Ukraine should have the courage to, quote, wave the white flag and negotiate. Speaking to the Swiss Radio Televisione Svizzera, the Pope also said that Ukraine shouldn't be ashamed to negotiate and carry out peace talks as many lives are being lost. The waving of a white flag is universally recognized as a symbol of surrender. The Pope's remarks prompted immediate reactions from both the Ukrainian and German ambassadors to the Holy See. On the social media platform X, they urged the Pope to appeal to Russia to cease hostilities. Fittingly, as the world responded to Pope Francis's remarks, a conference on truth, justice, and liberty in a pluri-anthropological world took place at the Pontifical Gregorian University. It was here that we had the opportunity to speak with Professor Miroslav Marinovich of the Ukrainian Catholic University, a renowned human rights activist.
Pope Francis just a few days ago asked the Ukraine especially to wave the white flag. There were a lot of reactions. What is your reaction to that?
For Pope Francis, white flag means negotiations. For us, it means surrender. For him, it is better to save human lives. And we know that we will lose human lives, and we will lose our opportunity to be a nation if we surrender. So it is different perceptions, different experience of life if you
Talking about conflict in Gaza, Pope Francis in that same interview said, quote, negotiations are never a surrender. It's the courage not to carry a country to suicide. The Vatican's Director of Communications, Matteo Bruni, issued a statement seeking to clarify the Pope's words. He said Pope Francis picked up the white flag term because it had been used by the interviewer. He said Pope Francis used the term to mean calling for a truce and the courage to negotiate. Secretary of State Cardinal Pietro Parolin, speaking to the Italian newspaper Corriere della Sera, clarified that the Pope's appeal for creating conditions for a diplomatic solution aims at a just and lasting peace, highlighting that negotiation signifies strength and courage, not weakness or surrender. Pope Francis inaugurated the 24 Hours for the Lord initiative at Rome's St. Pius V parish, emphasizing the transformative power of confession and God's forgiveness.
The Lord removes the ashes from the ember of the soul, cleanses those inner stains that prevent us from trusting in God, from embracing our brothers, from loving ourselves. He forgives everything.
Walking in the New Life serves as this year's theme. It's a call to realign with our original beauty, the essence of moving forward, said the Holy Father. Pope Francis underscores the necessity of contrite hearts and divine intervention for true healing, reminding us that only God can cleanse and renew our spirits, freeing us from the bondage of sin. During the penitential liturgy in front of the Blessed Sacrament, Pope Francis heard confessions. As 24 Hours for the Lord unfolds across the globe, Pope Francis's message resonates deeply: to approach the sacrament of healing and joy with confidence, walking anew in the light of God's boundless forgiveness.
A Hello and welcome to this week's Vaticano Updates, the most important news from the Holy Father and the Vatican. The Coptic Church decided to suspend theological dialogue with the Catholic Church after the release of the Vatican document Fiducia Supplicans that allows Catholic priests to bless couples in irregular situations and also same-sex couples. The Coptic Church now wants to reevaluate the relationship and establish new norms and mechanisms for the continuation of the dialogue. The Pontifical Academy for Life emphasized that there is no right to take a human life right after France became the first country in the world to enshrine the right to abortion in its constitution. While noting that the protection of human life is humanity's first objective, the Vatican Academy also acknowledged the myriad of socioeconomic and personal difficulties that some families and women face. Monsignor Shane L. Kirby was appointed to the Vatican's highest court. Kirby is a priest from the Diocese of Scranton, Pennsylvania, and was named the Substitute Promoter of Justice of the Supreme Tribunal of the Apostolic Signatura. The Supreme Tribunal was established in the 15th century and is one of three courts within the Church. It functions as a Supreme Court, hearing appeals coming from the two other tribunals. For International Women's Day, Pope Francis addressed participants of the conference Women in the Church, Builders of Humanity at the Vatican. The Holy Father acknowledged that throughout periods of history, women have been largely excluded from social and ecclesial life. He also referred to women as builders of humanity, highlighting the nature of women as builders in cooperation with the Creator, in the service of life, the common good, and peace. To mark the 30th anniversary of diplomatic relations between Jordan and the Holy See, the Vatican's foreign minister, Archbishop Paul Richard Gallagher, visited the King of Jordan, Abdullah II bin al-Hassan. During his trip, Gallagher also visited the Hashemite Charitable Organization, a center for collecting humanitarian aid sent from Jordan to the Gaza Strip. Thank you for watching this week's Vaticano Updates. Andreas Tornhauser for EWTN Vaticano.
In a few moments, we'll be back with more on Vaticano. In the heart of Rome, among ancient splendors and relics, lies a treasure seldom seen by the public eye. The Basilica of Santa Anastasia is the guardian of a relic of Saint Joseph. The Diocese of Rome has granted EWTN a unique opportunity to film the relic up close, which was last shown to the world in 2020 on the occasion of the year of Saint Joseph. For 16 centuries, the Basilica of Saint Anastasia has housed the Holy Garment, believed to have been brought to Rome by Saint Jerome in the 4th century, along with a colorful veil of the Virgin Mary. The two relics offer a glimpse into the Holy Family's life, where Saint Joseph silently cared for Mary and Jesus. March 19th, the Feast of Saint Joseph, celebrates the patron saint of fathers. In Italy and around the world, it's a day to honor the men who embody the spirit of giving for their families. And Saint Joseph could serve as the model for fathers everywhere, especially now when many families face the challenge of staying together. In the United States, one out of every four children live in a home without a father figure, a situation mirrored globally. This absence impacts millions, shaping our communities and our future. Families on pilgrimage in Rome agree that the father figure is crucial to the family's well-being.
The figure of father is a very strong figure, so the kids have to feel safe. And the mother and the father will give the love each other, and so the kids are safe.
For the family, the father figure is the identity, the protection, the support.
Es el sustento.
La figura del padre es importante.
The father figure is important because I believe that he is the one who gives identity. He is the one who leaves a mark on you and, indeed, from childhood, enables you to fulfill your destiny and purpose.
Saint Joseph is very important. He represents a greater love for a child who is not his own, like Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ, Son of Mary, Son of God, but not of Saint Joseph. However, Saint Joseph was his protection during a period on earth, and his upbringing was very significant.
Pope Francis, speaking about fatherhood during his general audience, emphasized that fathers are not born, but made. It's about accepting the responsibility for another's life, a commitment that transforms a man into a father.
A man does not become a father simply by bringing a child into the world, but by taking up the responsibility to care for that child.
This responsibility Saint Joseph carried out through his life and left an example for today's fathers.
In your family is to live heroically.
Bishop Robert Barron, reflecting in an interview with EWTN in Rome, points out that Saint Joseph is the man of action.
I love how Joseph never speaks in the Gospels. We never hear one word from him. He's a man of obedience to the Lord. He takes in the divine word and then he does it. He acts. Not a lot of blah blah and talking and explaining and excusing himself. He listens and he acts. And he acts by providing and protecting. Or look to Joseph, listen, take in the divine word, and then get going, do it.
Poi Giuseppe. Monsignor Bongiovanni, a priest from the Diocese of Rome who assists couples in preparing for the sacrament of marriage, also emphasizes that the key traits embodied by Saint Joseph throughout his life, responsibility and humbleness, are the important qualities for a husband and a father.
San Giuseppe, ecco, è l'immagine di come deve essere un papà.
Saint Joseph is the image of how a father should be. To start with, Saint Joseph was obedient to God. Saint Joseph is a strong man who assumes his responsibilities. Mary knows that she can count on him, in times of joy, as well as in times of trial. Saint Joseph is hardworking. He is not a lazy man. He is not an adolescent. He is a mature man, aware of his responsibility and living it to the fullest. And then Joseph is a man of prayer and meekness, of tenderness and patience, and the model one should refer to and pray to so that mankind discerns the Father's role.
Perché aiuti l'umanità a riscoprire il ruolo del padre.
Pope Francis, in his apostolic letter Patris Corde, presents Saint Joseph as a figure of compassionate love and as a father who accepts, teaches, and is present through the ordinary yet significant actions of daily life. In the Basilica of Saint Anastasia in Rome, Saint Joseph's cloak symbolizes a story of love and sacrifice. Legend has it that upon Mary's suggestion, Joseph traded the cloak she had given him on their wedding day for wood to continue his carpentry, symbolizing the selflessness and care at the heart of his legacy.
For the love of you, O Lord, I have studied, I have kept vigil, I have worked, I have preached and taught.
With these words, at the end of his life, St. Thomas Aquinas defined the reason behind his lifelong philosophical and theological labors. In the heart of Italy, the Catholic Church honors an important figure in its history, St. Thomas Aquinas, on the 750th anniversary of his passing. Cardinal Pietro Parolin, the Vatican's Secretary of State, led the celebrations, embodying the enduring legacy of the angelic doctor.
Ed è veramente formidabile, straordinario.
Truly formidable, extraordinary, is the legacy that St. Thomas Aquinas has left us. A philosophical and theological legacy for the Church and humanity, for each and every one of us. Such a legacy constitutes a great grace from the Lord, and we must be particularly grateful for it.
Cardinal Parolin, during his homily, invited everyone to follow St. Thomas's example of holiness, highlighting his deep love for God and his dedication to the search for truth. The small town of Priverno, south of Rome, where St. Thomas's alleged skull is revered, became the focal point for this historic commemoration. The eve of the anniversary saw a procession, as the co-cathedral of Santa Maria Annunziata filled with locals and visitors alike, all drawn together by their reverence for St. Thomas.
Ho trovato subito questa forte devozione del popolo privernate, non solo.
I immediately found the strong devotion of the citizens of Priverno, but also from the citizens of the neighboring towns towards St. Thomas, a great saint who, with his simplicity, entered into the profound depth of the mystery of God.
St. Thomas Aquinas' journey on earth came to an end at the age of 48 at the Fossa Nova Abbey, while on the way to attend the Council of Lyon in 1274.
Here, St. Thomas spent the last days of his life. Aquinas was a guest of a cousin at the castle of Mayenza, and from there, he asked to be taken to a sacred place and was led to the Abbey of Fossa Nova, where he concluded his earthly pilgrimage.
3 months before his death, according to those close to him, Aquinas experienced an intense revelation while he was offering Mass. This event remains pivotal to understanding his cessation from writing, as Cardinal Parolin emphasized during his homily.
While celebrating Mass in the chapel of St. Nicholas, Thomas underwent a surprising transformation. After this Mass, he never wrote again, nor dictated anything, but also disposed of his writing materials. His secretary was astonished, but the master responded simply, "I can no longer. All that I have written seems like straw compared to what I have seen."
In commemorating the 750th anniversary of St. Thomas Aquinas, Cardinal Pietro Parolin underscores the timeless harmony between faith and reason. This celebration reaffirms Aquinas' legacy as a beacon for intellectual and spiritual enlightenment, reminding us that faith and reason are intertwined paths to truth. We'll be back after a short break with more on Vaticano. Vatican Museums during the season of Lent is offering a special tour highlighting key works about the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. Sister Emanuela Edwards, head of the Educational Activities Office, gives us a sample of the itinerary, beginning at the Pious Christian Museum.
We decided to start our Lenten tour here so that we could, if you like, learn from the early Christians. Before us, we have the sarcophagus, which is unique in many ways. It's the anastasy, the sarcophagus of the resurrection, which is surrounded initially by scenes of the Lord's Passion. So we start off here with Pilate, who condemns Christ to death and is about to wash his hands of the Lord. On the other side, we can see how the story develops. The Lord is then crowned with thorns, and then he finds Simon of Cyrene, who helps to carry his cross. But the central portion is the central mystery of our faith, the Lord's death and resurrection. We have the key row. This is the symbol of Christ, his first two initials in Greek. And you can see he's with a crown, because he comes to his glory in his resurrection. True to the biblical account, we even see the soldiers who slept while the Lord rose, because they were unable. No power on earth could stop the Lord's resurrection. Before we move on, there's a wonderful opportunity to see this magnificent sarcophagus, which in a way summarizes the story of St. Peter. And as we know, St. Peter denied the Lord, not once, but three times. What's interesting in this scene, though, it's a scene of hope, because typically in these sarcophaguses, we see the cockerel at Peter's feet, because the cock crowing is the conscience that isn't happy, saying that you're doing something wrong. We see the cockerel instead in the tree, with Christ looking at the cockerel, and vice versa. And so in this sense, the cockerel becomes not the conscience who warns St. Peter, but instead a symbol of the resurrection. The early Christians found the image of the cross so terrible, they used Old Testament stories to mean the Lord's death and resurrection. And one of those is Daniel, who goes into the lion's den and emerges days later as if from a tomb, and his hands spread wide as if praying, also spread wide as if on the cross.
The other prominent location on the Lenten tour is the Pinacoteca, the picture gallery, where among the works we make a stop at the Entombment of Christ by Caravaggio.
We can't imagine a more difficult moment than the moment when Christ's body is being placed dead on the stone. And in fact, if you look, you can see the stone reaches out towards us. In many places in the scriptures, we read, the stone that the builders rejected has become the cornerstone. And our Lord couldn't have been more rejected than this moment when he's being placed dead in the tomb. Nicodemus, he looks out to the viewer, and this creates a particular effect. It says to us what all the fathers of the church have always taught. There isn't a person alive for whom the Lord didn't die. Nicodemus, look, says to us, he died for you. Looking further at the masterpiece, we can see the three women who remained at the foot of the cross, Mary's mother, Mary Magdalene, and Mary of Clopas. Mary Magdalene wipes her eyes with the tears. And Mary of Clopas, her arms raised in terror or even in hope, the early Christians prayed in this way. Perhaps in this moment she prays to God, a sign of hope, looking towards the resurrection. And so a Lenten visit to the Vatican Museums is to ponder this moment, to take some time aside from our normal lives, to enter the world of beautiful masterpieces, and to allow these masterpieces to speak as the Gospels speak, to call us to have faith.